I want to welcome everyone to our Keeping on Track open line. Are you getting what you expect from your staff? My name is Dana Barocca. I'm the CEO of Lighthouse Consulting Services, and we'll be hosting our program today. For those of you joining us for the first time, at Lighthouse, everything we do goes back to our mission statement to help keep our organizations off the rocks of potential self-destruction. We do this through our in-depth work style assessments to raise the hiring bar. And we assist sales and operations to avoid getting stuck in shallow water so they have smooth sailing. We also offer a number of workshop topics to associations and trade organizations. And if you'd like more information, please email me as indicated on your screen. Our Keeping on Track open line series is in response to a number of calls we've been getting from many of our clients, both domestically and globally, to address the various business issues that most organizations are facing today. Our goal is to make this an interactive program, so on your screen, you'll see an area you can send questions or ideas during our discussion, and we'll attempt to respond to as many of you as possible. So please join us with your thoughts and insights you have along the way. At the conclusion of our program, we're going to open up the line so you can talk directly with our guests. You'll also want to have some paper and a pen handy to take notes, since we'll be sharing many ideas that you'll want to consider and implement with your team and trusted advisors. We have quite a few people joining us at this moment, so I just want to remind everybody there's a print icon on the right-hand corner of your screen, so you can print the slides out for today if you'd like. Our special guest with us today is Larry Cassidy. Larry's been a chair in Vistage International for over 25 years. Larry is a longtime friend, amazing thinker, and author, and a forward business futurist, I would say. He currently works with some 50 executives every month and has facilitated over 1,200 executive group meetings. Wow. And participated in 11,000 face-to-face discussions with chief executives about all aspects of businesses, along with key executives. He's prepared his journey at Miami University of Ohio and Northwestern for an MBA, as a Marine Corps officer with public companies and General Mills, Quaker Oats, and PepsiCo. He's worked with private, family, foreign-owned firms in the 1980s as general manager and CEO of local companies. He does executive coaching and also serves on many advisory boards. I feel privileged to have Larry with us today and to share ideas that will help each of us in preparing for the future and for dealing with today's business issues. Also, registration for our next program begins at the end of this program, and the topic will be customer relationship management. Larry, I want to welcome you, and thank you for being back on Open Line.
Good to be here, Dan.
So, off we go. Let's go to the first slide.
Got it.
Let's go
to the second one. Okay. Why do we hire others? I thought this would be a fairly rudimentary place to start, but I've listed three fundamental reasons, and those people listening may have some others that might sound like I'm sick and tired of doing it myself. But usually it's about quantity. We can't get it all done anymore, and that can be in the company or that can be in the department. The particular operation. Certainly quality, if you're leading and managing, one of your goals should be to assemble a group of folks who can do things better than you can. And that kind of encompasses capabilities because as an organization grows and develops, it usually requires some unique skills and knowledge that you may not have and that you definitely need. And I see more and more of that happening in the companies I work with now, that it's not just enough to know what they used to know. They've got to know and be involved in other aspects of running their business, managing it, and what they offer to customers. So I think those are basically the reasons that we hire others. You, Dana, have any questions on that?
Well, it is. It's a bit overwhelming, and hiring the right people is key. And sometimes, do you find that some people start scratching their head as to, why do I have these people here that aren't doing what I want?
Well, yeah. And the more of them that you bring into your organization, the more you're likely to scratch your head. I think this is probably a good slide to make a point, at least one that I believe in, and that is, I think there's one huge number one thing that you have to do in running a business today, and everything else is a distant second, or maybe more accurately, most everything else gets taken care of if you do number one well. And number one is, you got to get the right people. This is a battle for talent, and you must have the right people. There's a story about Marriott back when he started his hotel chain. He would interview every single employee, and he interviewed them first, and he asked them one question. If they couldn't get the question answered right, the interview was over. And the question was, we have three key constituencies. They're all important. We have stockholders, we have customers, and we have employees. Which is the most important? And back in the early 1900s, people typically said, well, shareholders. Late 1900s, we would have said customers. If you wouldn't have gotten the job with Marriott. Marriott said it was employees, because the employee is the only person who can take care of the needs of the other two. If you don't get the employees right, they won't take care of the customers right. They won't take care of you or any of the other constituencies. So,
wow, that's really interesting.
Well, that's probably more than anything I put on the slide is why we hire others. We want really good people to bring our dream of what we want our company to be into focus. So, next slide.
Before we go to the next slide, I have a question. We're hearing this from companies across the country and globally. It's just really tough to find good people. Are you hearing that also, or finding that?
I mean, isn't that amazing? We have all these people out of work. And I don't have anybody I work with who tells me it's really any easier to find good people. I guess if I have good people in my company, I work real hard to hang on to them. And that doesn't mean there aren't people out of work who are very good. There's a lot of circumstance going on there out there, and some of it didn't have anything to do with the people who were let go. But I don't think it's any time to... Well, what do I think? I think this is not a time to go bottom fishing. You don't go bottom fishing in terms of the people you hire. You hire talent, and you pay what you can, given the size of your company, to get the talent you need. Because otherwise, you're going to lose. And I see that happening. I mean, I see companies that cut corners get in trouble. And I see ones who are willing to bite the bullet and really go get good people. Do well over time. So I don't know what size companies all of them are who are listening today, but I do have people say to me, well, you know, I just hire really good people and then they get hired away from me. And my answer is, well, you want to hire people that nobody else wants to hire? You want to hire people that other people try to take away from you eventually. At least you have terrific talent during the time you have them.
Good point. Yeah. No, this is a great segue then into the next slide.
Okay, so you want me to do the click? There we go. I think. Yeah. I'm going to actually go to the next slide, and then I'll cycle back.
Okay.
Which probably means I got them in the wrong order here. Hang on. How do we deal with getting people to do what we want to do? And let's start with the first thing. Do we just tell them what to do? That is incredibly efficient up front. It takes almost no time at all. Dana, here's what I want you to do. Go do it. And don't come back and tell us done. Okay? Or do we involve the people that are going to do the job in figuring out the how so they have some ownership? That takes more time. I would just submit to those people that are listening today that we never, ever have time up front to either do it right or involve people. But we always have time to do it all over again. So, excuse me, my antivirus machine just went off. I guess maybe it didn't like you, Dana. Henry Ford said, "No man is as apathetic as one in pursuit of another man's goal." You want somebody to be interested in and have some skin in the game. Let them have a little bit of a say in it. I mean, that's why you hired them, hopefully, because they're better at doing things than you are. So let's go back now to the previous slide.
I'm fascinated what you have in mind for this, Larry.
For what?
For what you're about to share.
Well, I mean, my premise, which I understand not everybody agrees with, but I've watched a lot of companies over time, and ones I think get the most successful results over an extended period of time without losing or with losing the least amount of stomach lining in the process, it's people that take time to share why this needs to be done and what's at stake. I mean, why is this important? And what is their role in it? And I want anybody that works for me and is going to go do an important project to feel like they are playing an important role in this. And I want them to drive home at night thinking like they really made a contribution. And the way I think that happens the best is to take a few minutes to establish clear and shared, I should have put shared in there, clear and shared expectations. Okay? Why are we doing this? What's at stake? What are the expectations? I mean, if we're actually going to work on this thing, what's the outcome that we want? Do we agree on that? Okay? You get those things lined up, you have a better chance to have alignment within the team and not only what needs to be done, but when it needs to be done. I don't know if that answers your question. Is there something else you have in mind about
this? Well, what about it? Let's take a department within an organization, and everyone thinks it's kind of been clearly shared as to what is at stake, and yet people get into their silo in a department, and then sales or customer service is going, you guys just don't understand. If you don't respond to us, you're going to be out of work, or we won't be able to keep the doors open. Yet everybody thinks they understand what's going on.
Yeah, I would suspect most people we're talking with this morning have some siloing going on. I think there's a general feeling that people in one department just don't feel like everybody understands what they're going through. And how you break that down is actually an entirely different topic, I suppose, here. But I think the way I tried to have the conversations was on the basis of what do I need to do in my department to help you in your department help me in my department be successful. Not you have to do this because I'm telling you to, but I want to help you, Dana, help me be successful. What do you need from me? And then here's what I need from you. We are supposed to be working together. I know that doesn't always happen, but I also know it's easier for me to talk about it on open line than it is for the people listening to actually execute it. But I'm sure there's some people that are listening that have had some great success in really connecting the dots within their organization, getting teams to work together, and they could tell you better than I can, you know, how much better the results are.
Larry, say that one more time, because that's a really key thing for everyone to share with others in the organization. Or would you like to recap that?
Yeah, which
well, thing? The brilliance that was just shared was, what do we need to do to help them, in other words, the other department, to be successful? And every department should be able to help support through that response somehow or another, right?
Yeah, it's not much of a shift. If I say to you, you've got to do this for me. I need you to do this for me. Think about how it comes across and what you're going to get back if you say, what do you need me to do to help you help me be more successful? Well, I need the sales forecast by this date, and then that lets me plan production, and I can get this stuff done, and it'll be shipped to your customers when you need it. Oh, great. That sounds good to me. Now, here's what I need I need from you. You know, I need to understand the manufacturing lead time ahead of time so I make the sale with the right lead. You know. And all that stuff sounds basic, but it doesn't always happen.
That's phenomenal.
Okay.
That's phenomenal. Thank you for sharing that.
Okay, so now we already went on this slide, so we'll go one more. I don't even like the title of this, and I dreamed it up. It sounds like a, like a handbook. But I think there's some important points. When you and I were talking before we actually started live, we were bantering about what's the most important thing on this slide. Hopefully all the things are important or I wouldn't put them there. But I put clarify at the top because I think at the end of the day, clarity wins. You know, making clear what needs to be done, the importance and the outcome expected. Takes a few minutes. I'm not talking about talking down to anybody, but clarity wins. The person you're talking to has a ton of other things they're doing. Probably most of them you gave them to do. So here's one more thing. How does that fit in? Why are we doing it? Where does it stack up in the order of things? And by the way, the person you're talking with and is accepting an assignment, I think also has an obligation to say to you, Dana, you gave me this, this, and this. If I take on this new thing, I can get it done when you want, but this and this will have to slip a little. So that kind of exchange, I think, is important. Otherwise, both parties are headed for an unhappy meeting at some later date. We've talked about involving people, soliciting ideas. I mean, you know what you know. It's what you don't know that might make the difference. And in my experience running companies, when I actually had serious conversations with people, the people doing the job knew a lot more about what needed to be done or what could be done than I did. I just thought I knew. But they're actually doing it every day. They knew. I might know a different result that I want, but then how would they know that if I didn't share it? I believe in creating ownership, and I believe in teams, at least team wherever possible. I mean, there are some things that obviously individuals have to do. But when that product leaves the dock or that service gets rendered, it's usually the result of a team. So it's not a bad idea to think about team, to develop a shared picture of the doing. I've really come to believe that if people can't see it in their mind, they really can't do it. If I can picture something in my mind, I can do it or I can figure out how to get it done. But if I can't even see it in my mind, the odds are not very good I'm going to get it done. So paint a picture.
Do you think, Larry, that it's helpful for different departments to visit each other, to gain that sense of empathy?
You know, I've had a number of conversations about this over the last couple of months. I don't know why it's popped up, but my suggestion every time is find a way to create interdisciplinary teams. Teams of five or six people to tackle a problem. Lord knows you've got enough legitimate problems in any organization today that cut across different departments. Put together an interdisciplinary team, somebody from each department, and they work together. And you might, you know, use some care in how you select the people. You know, you may know a couple of people are going to butt heads and that won't work, but, you know, just figure it out and put the teams together. Let them work on the project. Let them come forward as a team. And then have another team do another project. And so, well, you're getting input you wouldn't have otherwise. You're getting a broad base of input. You're causing people to work together. You're breaking down walls. I mean, I think it's a terrific device. You know, kind of at a lower level, I would go out to lunch with five or six people from the company, and they would be from different departments. So you can do things like that. But really having them to work together and letting them come in and present to you a good solution and have a win as a team from different departments is very powerful. So I don't know if that's what you're getting at, but that's one of the things I'm recommending.
Okay, that's good. Thank you. Also, if anybody has questions or thoughts, you can throw the ideas out in the chat box. And I'm kind of thinking after our next slide, if the group would like to do this and you can put in the chat box, I'd like to open up the line to make this a group discussion because this is a big topic. This is great, Larry.
Before we leave this slide, I want to comment on milestones. I have to go back to my sins of the past. Too often, years ago, I would give somebody an assignment, and off they would go, and the date that the thing was due would come, and I'd summon them, and it wasn't done. Surprise, surprise. And kind of what I learned from that and from the time Tech, now Vistage Group I was in, I had a couple of people say to me, you know, what you really need to do is establish milestones, agreed milestones that occur between the beginning and the end of the project where you can check in without micromanaging. How's it going? Because if it's not hitting those milestone markers, you know early on it's not going to get done on time, and then you have some time to take remedial action. So that's the last comment I would say.
On the milestone question, somebody just put a question in. When to hire? Any advice on timing things right and anticipating the need for hiring?
Yeah, my point of view is that the best thing that happens as a result of doing an annual plan or some planning for your organization is that it will help you clarify your people needs well in advance. And I just had a one-to-one with a gentleman this morning, and his number one topic was hiring too fast. And we talked about, why do you hire too fast? You hire too fast because you don't think ahead. Then somebody leaves, or they turn out not to be good enough, and now you need an immediate replacement. And when you hire under those circumstances, well, I mean, you help people do this for a living, Danny. You can tell them what happens under those circumstances. So you need to think ahead. I'll give you a statistic. I can't remember where I read it, but the statistic is that people continue to keep people on a job for something like 17 months after they've decided that they're going to have to replace them. And on the other hand, people leave companies in about 6 months after they decide it's not the right company for them. My guess is that number's shorter now with Gen Y coming in. So I guess that means employees are about three times smarter than employers about where they should be. But when you know that something isn't being done right, you need to take action. And that may be training, it may be moving somebody to another position where they're better suited, or it may be replacing them. But you need to hire when the job's not getting done, or you sense it's not getting done, because we're all on short leashes now.
Another question just came in on that topic. Let's see if I can summarize it. Companies will hold on to someone thinking, oh, well, I can turn them around, or it's better to know the person that's with you versus the unknown coming in, so they're willing to tolerate it. And where is that line drawn?
Well, you know, I'm smiling because I'm going to suggest something that I didn't always do very well myself years ago, but get out of the savior business. I mean, you're not going to save anybody. If they're not right for the job, you're not going to save them. And that's your responsibility, to use the tools at your command to determine upfront as best you can whether you think somebody's right for the job, and then observe the job they do. It doesn't mean they may not be right for another job in the company. The best piece of advice I ever heard came from a guy who'd run 300 companies. He was actually a turnaround fellow, and a very good one. And he was asked in one of my meetings by a member, well, when should you replace somebody when they're not doing the job? And Jerry said, right away. And he said, yeah, but we're right in the middle of this, and why would I replace them right in the middle of this project? And his answer was twofold. He said, well, why would you want somebody who's not doing the job to continue doing the project? That doesn't make any sense. And secondly, the reason you get rid of them right now is it forces you to go get the right person.
Huh.
As long as you hang on to the wrong person, you have no real impetus to go get the right person. And remember, the battle's for talent. You have to have the right people.
Huh. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. So that's all I really would have to say on that. The last slide, I think this is the last one, Dan, I'm not sure.
Yes.
At each project milestone, follow up. Don't wait to be surprised at the end. You're obviously reviewing progress versus the agreements. It's hard to do if you don't have the agreements in place with people, and that's why you take the time to go through the project and all. Correct using the same tools. Two goals. Your goals are to get it done and to create an effective doing process. What we've talked about today is kind of, if it's a switch for you, it's a little more work than in the beginning. But what you want to do is get a process, an understanding, an ethic in the company as to how we go about doing things. And it's much faster in the long run, and hopefully this is appreciated. It's much easier on you. A little tougher in the beginning, much easier in the long run. And the one last thing I'd want to say on this slide, and then we can take any questions, is I had a member a long time ago say something I've never forgotten. She said, I would tell people what I wanted them to do, and I would ask them if they understood me. And they'd say, yeah, sure. And then they'd go out and they wouldn't do it. I'd call them back in, we'd talk again. I'd say, well, it's not enough that you understand me. Repeat back to me what I said. So I want to be sure we're clear. They'd repeat it back, they'd go out and they wouldn't do it. She said, I finally figured out that there's only one question I really should ask somebody. After we're all done, we've shared, we've agreed and everything. The question is, when you leave my office, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? When I walk into these one-to-ones I have, two, three, four of them a day, without fail, they are talking to me about things that have not gotten done, or what they want people to do, or what they want the company to do. Probably do, done, those words are used one way or another more than any other that I ever hear. Probably used in the companies that are listening constantly all day long. Do this, don't. So that would be my last little story. Ask people what they're really going to do.
That's really good. A couple questions have come in. What if the manager or the CEO or key executive is just so frustrated and the thinking process is, why don't they just know?
The person you're referring to now, the questioner is referring, I assume, to the person who's not getting the job done that they want done?
Correct.
Okay. Well, it's not going to be a real high-tech answer. They don't know what's in your mind because they're not you. They're running around with their own mind. And quite often the person who's making the request has most often a broader grip on what's going on in the department, the company. They're higher in the chain. That's why they're asking for things to be done. And they have a picture in their mind that the person who has to do it doesn't have. And quite often that picture in their mind is a picture of the finished product. Well, a person who's listening to you and taking the instructions doesn't have that picture. That's why it needs to be built. And I would suggest if you're going to be frustrated over something, be a little frustrated over having to take a little extra time up front to get clarity and to find out whether the person really understands what they need to do to paint the picture that you have in your mind, to connect the dots that you have in your mind. Nobody's going to know what's in your mind unless you share it. They know what's in their mind. I don't know if that's helpful, but I think it's reality.
Yeah, that's a good one. Another question is, 10% of their staff operates at a fast pace, and the rest of the people are a much slower pace. How to get the slower pace working at the same pacing as the fast pace? How's that for a question?
Mm-hmm. Good luck. I mean, that's about right. I don't know, 10, 15%. Just go, go, go. and there's probably, if you look around, 10 or 15% you're not even sure awake. And then you have the most of us in the middle. And I wouldn't put my energy into trying to get everybody to move faster. I would take a look at my processes and make sure that they enable people to be as good as they can be. It's a great book called E Myth Revisited, and the concept, one of the concepts in the book is that if you really work hard on your systems and your processes, it really allows average people to do above average work and above average people to do good work. So that's one thing that you can look at. But the way I would correct that is not trying to shove water uphill, but go hire some more people that work fast. Make that 15 or 20%. Go hire them. And a pretty good rule is if you want more, spend most of your time getting more from the people who can deliver it. Fish where the fish are. And the questioner's fish are probably in that 10% of the pond. So just go get more of them.
Question came in. How do you know if they're fast-paced or not when interviewing them?
Wow. You and I both know Barry, and Barry Deutsch is terrific in developing questions that are related to what you want done. I think you need to make an honest assessment of what you want done and the pace that it's going to take to do that. And then you really dig and dig and dig. I think, Dana, you may have some testing that can help answer that.
Mm-hmm.
But you also dig and dig. And what have they done? Under what circumstances did they do it? What were the challenges? How did you get past that? You know, how hard did you have to work? It's, you know, they're kind of historical questions that get at what it is you think you need on the job. You know, but you may have some other jobs you don't want worked at fast pace. You want work very carefully and very thoroughly and very precisely. But you always have to tee up your questions in the interview as best you can to try to get at what you want. And then I think you use testing as a supplement to that. But it is an imperfect science. Somebody asked me recently, what kind of batting average can you expect in hiring? And you know, the old jokes, you get about 50-50. You know, I think, I don't know if that's true, but what if you could raise it to where 70% of the people you hired were truly what you thought they were and delivered what you wanted? I mean, to me, that if it is 50-50, that 20% swing would be astonishing in terms of productivity and what you could deliver. And I frankly don't know what the top number is that you could ever achieve. You may have a better idea.
So in taking the people that are currently on board or the staff that's there, any techniques that you know for identifying, I guess take the ABC players and then figure, okay, I can deal with the C players to this level, then have to want to change them up because I want to get B players.
Well, yeah, we all want to hire A players. The problem is, the world's not full of A players. The world has got some A players, got a lot more B players, way more C players. And that's the pool from which we hire. And I'm not being an elitist. I mean, depending on what job you're hiring for, I would be a C player for some of them, believe me. You know, so it really comes back down to what have people done, what skills do they have, what capabilities have they shown, and how does that fit what I want? And I don't know if this is, you know, kind of the direction you're going with the question, Dana, but I'll throw in that back to the guy who was wondering about why he always had to hire in such a hurry. You've got to take time to be very clear about what the job is that you're hiring for and what the outcome is that you want as a result of hiring for that position. Well, we're not hiring to get somebody behind the desk. We're hiring because we want a result. What kind of person with what kind of background gives us assurance that they can deliver that result? If you're hiring for a really high position in the company, for example, friend and a longtime mentor of mine who used to say, no vice presidents in training. In other words, when he hired for a top position, he wanted somebody who had proven that they could handle that top position. He put people he wanted to develop into lower positions and let them cut their teeth and qualify to move up the ladder. So I don't know if that answers fits the question. But.
No, that's perfect. That's perfect. Well, I think what I'd like to do is I'm going to open up the line. So if anybody has some questions or discussions for Larry, because this is a topic that everybody's facing. Are we getting what we expect from our staff? What I'm going to ask everybody before I open it up is if you could put your phone on mute so we're not getting background noise and computers and phones ringing, and then unmute your phone if you have a question. So we'll see if this works. We have a lot of people on the program today. So here we go.
The conference is no longer in lecture mode.
Okay, the line is open. So if you could put your phone on mute and then unmute it if you have a question for Larry. All's quiet now.
We answered everything.
You answered all the questions, Larry.
It's amazing.
Yeah, this is a great discussion topic. Or if somebody would like to put some more questions in the chat box, we can do it that way. The group is shy.
Yeah, I guess I have a question. How do you deal with pushback when you go and tell them to please do something and then you ask them what can you do to help them and the answer is, well, can you do it because I don't have time, but yet 5 minutes earlier they were having coffee and talking.
That's a good one.
Maybe the idea that when they're supposed to be working, they're having coffee and talking should be addressed, so that you don't have that situation. But, you know, life's not perfect. I get what you're saying. If somebody said to me, well, why don't you do it? Which is, by the way, an attempt to transfer their job uphill to the manager or the leader. I don't want to get confusing here, but there's a fellow named Stephen Covey a lot of you have heard about. He's got four quadrants. That's the lower left-hand quadrant. That's people transferring their job back up the ladder by saying, how would you do it, or why don't you do it? And if they say that to me, I think my response is, look, I hired you to do the job. If you don't want to or can't do the job, I don't need you. I want you to do the job. But I think that's something you got to cut off at the draw. People are very adroit at drawing the leader in, trying to get them to do the job or the hard part of the job for them. So it's not a real attractive answer, but I would make that clear or get somebody else.
Oh, yeah. I just had a client tell me the other day they were upset that certain number of people were on the internet during the day doing internet stuff, doing searches, and they had their IT department do an evaluation of what's going on, and they found the average person was spending 32% of their time doing searches outside of the work activity, and they came back and said, well, this is an acceptable number. Well, some of the managers were going through the roof. Well, when they started digging into it, people were working, but they were also on the internet too, doing things at the same time. And the question came up. Well, but the focus is going to be off. They could be making more phone calls, contacting more customers, doing this or that, whatever it is. Interesting topic, though.
I think from a legal standpoint, I'm not a lawyer, so you can check on this. But I've had this discussion in our groups, and the company owns the IT equipment. And they have a right to limit the usage of it, and I would definitely do that. My instinct is, in some cases, 32% understates how much fooling around goes on computers, and we're not even getting into what sites are going to. So that culturally, that would be unacceptable.
Right, right. That's a great question. Thank you for asking that. Any thoughts or questions for Larry? All quiet again. Got to unmute the phone. Well, Larry, see, once again, you answered all the topics. So what we can do is, if you want to talk to Larry offline, you can give him a call, because this is a topic that we are all facing with. And I love what you shared earlier, Larry, to ask a team or others, what do we need to do to help them to be successful and to work together to create that success for one another? Any other questions before we close down today? Okay, Larry, why don't we get the last slide done?
Okay, Doc.
And you can sign up for our next program here. In just a few minutes, I'm going to be closing everything down here, but you'll have an opportunity here to sign up for our next program, Customer Relationship Management. And in the next couple of days, you'll be receiving a recording and a PowerPoint of today's program, and that will be off again in just a couple of days to you. If you'd like to have other people sign up for the next program or have them attend, just please drop us an email. And you can see our email in the lower right-hand corner there, and we'll arrange for that. Larry and I want to thank you so much for your time today and for all the valuable ideas that have been shared. If you'd like to contact Larry to have further discussion on specifics about your industry, your team, or to have some one-to-one time together, or to discuss any of the ideas shared today, you can see Larry's contact information on the screen. The information shared today is the property of Lighthouse Consulting Services, LLC, located in Santa Monica, California. Our mission statement is to bring effective insight to your organization. If you'd like more information on our services, please write me at dana@lighthouseconsulting.com. If you have other topics you'd like us to address, please let us know. Thank you so much for joining us, and we look forward to having you join us for our next Keeping on Track Open Line program. Have a great day. Larry, thank you again for sharing all the valuable ideas.
Thank you.
All righty. Take care, everybody. Bye-bye.